Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. It's episode 36 and I am your host, Rob Cope, and with me is Dan Farrant. How's it going, Dan?
Very well, thanks, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, very good. How was your Christmas?
It was lovely. Yeah, we had a lovely time. What about you guys?
Yeah, it was very nice. Went to Lincoln.
Oh, beloved Lincoln.
Yeah, that was cool. And then my sister had a baby, which was cool as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So my bloodline continues no matter what at this point.
Well, you didn't have a baby, Rob.
No, I know. Okay, not my like, what's the word? We're genetically similar.
Yeah.
So I don't know I don't know how much it counts as me. It's like, it must have something to do with me in a small way.
Well, she's probably not even, the baby's probably not even a cope.
No, it's not. Not in name, but in blood.
Right.
You know, what if I need a kidney or something? I think it would be it would be on the cards to test it for.
Well, I'm sure if you needed a kidney, I'm sure we could ask the listeners. I'm sure they would jump at the chance.
Yeah, someone
to offer you an organ.
That's a wonderful reassurance to go through life knowing that that the listeners of your podcast are so loyal.
I guess cool. Judging by, you know, the uptake on the competitions that we've had, you're going to be swarmed.
Inundated with offers.
Yeah, that was the word I was looking for, inundated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you ever imagine being an organ donor?
Well, I'm on the organ donors list.
Oh, very nice.
So I'd quite like to be an organ donor. I mean, it would be a good thing, wouldn't it? But then it probably means that something unfortunate has happened to you.
Yeah, of course. So it's a double-edged sword, that particular problem. Because I like the idea of me, you know, you're almost living on.
Yeah. You know? Have you seen 7 Pounds, the Will Smith film?
Oh, I haven't.
Oh, well, watch that and then we'll continue this conversation.
Oh, my goodness. Does that go for the listeners as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a big Will Smith fan. I don't know about anyone else.
I am. Big time.
It brought me to close to tears.
Wow. That's interesting. I have a feeling that Will Smith's got a particularly bad agent at the moment because he just seems to be doing garbage.
Like what?
Well, there's a new Netflix film out where
it's a series, apparently.
Is it?
Not a film. I haven't watched it yet. Neither have you. So I don't know if you can judge it.
I've prejudged it. I've reviewed Jazz Podcast Review is in.
Yeah. Your preconceptions are...
Exactly. Mm. My idea of a good Will Smith film is the Independence Day or Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I know that's not a film, but that will never go out of fashion.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. The Jazz Podcast.
Yeah.
So it's episode 36 and today's guest is Yaz Ahmed.
Mm. Can I just... Rob, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Is this coming out tomorrow?
Yes, Thursday. Well, Thursday
today,
the 4th.
I can then say today is my birthday.
Wow, happy birthday, Dan.
Thanks so much, Rob. Thank you.
Oh, this is incredible news.
Yeah. You should have really remembered that, really, shouldn't you?
Yes.
I shouldn't have had to tell you.
You did tell me once before.
Mm.
Well, let's all sing you happy birthday
Well,
now.
No, let's not. Well, yeah. Sure? Yeah, no, let's not.
Okay, fair enough. Mm. I have one more story before we get
Go
to
ahead.
Work.
How was Iceland?
Yes, Iceland. It was really
lovely. We should
really
have these catch-up conversations before we start recording.
Yeah, we could do that in future. That's an interesting theory.
But yeah, how was Iceland?
It was amazing. It was very cold. Mm. We landed last night at midnight. Last night being Tuesday night in this Storm Eleanor. Like 80-mile-an-hour winds.
Wow.
We were down above the runway and the wind was gusting so hard. The plane was like tilting violently.
Oh no!
I know, and the pilot had to abort the landing.
Oh, I bet he needed to get you home because he was a jazz podcast listener. I bet wasn't he?
He was well aware.
He knew you had to make this recording.
Yaz's episode was recorded at 9 a.m.
Yeah,
the next morning, and
didn't delay.
Exactly. I missed her interview once before when I was when I was ill. So
Yeah,
of course I had a little word, you know, once he was aware that I was on board, then then we risked it all and had another crack at the landing.
Well done.
Yeah.
Good to have you back.
So I'm gonna play thanks, Sam. I'm gonna play you a song from Yaz's album, The Saboteur. It's not quite, it's La Saboteuse. I'm scared to speak in French. Oh. You're quite good at French. That'd be right.
I am learning French. What's it? Yaz Ahmed. I just listened to a track from it that you told me to listen to. It was good. The Lost Pearl.
The Lost
Is that
Pearl.
What we're about to play?
That's what we're about to play.
Oh, The Saboteurs. It's the feminine form of saboteur.
Ooh.
So when you say a feminine thing, you usually do E-U-S-E.
Nice. Nice work. Well, let's check it out. The Last Pearl. Oh, it's called The Lost Pearl.
Oh, no. Keep that in. So nearly.
Oh, the jazz podcast. The most low-budget thing in the world. Yaz Ahmed, welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Yeah, that's it. that's my intro skills. I should have said more. It sounded like there was more and then there wasn't. Oh, man.
That's lovely.
So where are you at the moment? What's going on?
Okay, I'm at home at the moment. I'm sort of preparing for my trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with my quartet. We're playing at the Winter Jazz Festival over there on the 10th of January at Le Poisson Rouge. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's been quite a stressful journey, though,
mm-hmm.
Trying to get the visas. Yeah, it's been such a palaver, but we have our visas and we're gonna go and it should all be fine. Yeah, I suppose it's just getting through security is the next sort of scary bit.
Oh,
I don't
yeah,
know if you've ever been to America. Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, they're very thorough.
And so, the screenings. They're rude yeah. as well. The Americans are so rude.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
You know, they're like angry about you taking chocolate in, never mind like, oh, it's a trumpet. Madness. So yeah. Just tell our lovely listeners who you are, just in case anyone is listening and doesn't already know you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm Yaz Ahmed. I'm a trumpet player and composer. I've recently, well, not recently, but last year in May, I released my second album, The Saboteurs, and I've been sort of spreading the word about that. And that's been going really well, and I'm really happy with the response. And it's taken me by surprise.
What surprised you about the response?
Well, only because I just make music. I kind of make music for myself in some ways. I'm not really thinking about impressing anyone or what other people will think. So I'm always trying to create music that's personal to me, and you know, I'm trying to tell a story, and I'm just sort of thrilled that people are listening and they like that story and they like my journey, and I think that's one of the beautiful kind of bonuses of creating music is when people sort of feel something, and that kind of makes it feel like, oh, it's worth it what I'm doing. And so, yeah, it's just a nice, you know, surprise for me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it feels great anytime you know, you've composed something yourself and people like it. But as you said, the best way is to just do it for yourself. And do whatever you want, you know, and then people can judge. Because then you end up, as you have done, with an amazing album that's not doesn't sound like it's been compromised anywhere.
No, definitely not. No, it's just all been, you know, just a lovely creative process. And
yeah, that sounds marvelous. And it's signed to something.
It's signed, did you say? Yeah.
What label is it on?
It's with Name Records. So they're actually they're an audio company first, but they have a record label attached.
Yeah.
And so they're very into good quality sound and sort of, you know, music that you can immerse yourself in. And that's why, they really picked up on it. And
how did you find
they wanted
them?
To release it. Well, it's just recommendations. They sort of seemed like a cool label. My colleague, Shabaka Hutchins, is signed or was signed to them with his band, Sons of Kemet. And some other people like Eska signed to them, and just kind of, you know, they have kind of cool people. And I felt like my music kind of fit in with their, they're kind of sort of, how would you describe them? They're quite broad. The music is quite broad. It's not just jazz based.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked that. That appealed to me. And yeah, they loved the album. And yeah. And then we went ahead.
Amazing. Do you just like send them an email?
I sent them an email. And sent them some sound, like private SoundCloud links.
Yeah.
And they loved it. They were just they were kind of like the final mixes. It wasn't the sort of the mastered tracks. Mm-hmm. And I always sent them kind of like a little snippet, so just like four tracks. And yeah, they fell in love with that, with the music. And I sent them the rest, and yeah, they sort of they did their best to reach a huge audience. I mean, like, they reached a heavy metal blog who absolutely loved the album.
Wow. And, that's so cool.
And a hip-hop blog, and just like, it's really been interesting seeing kind of which scenes and kind of audiences have been picking up the music and really liking it, you know, people who don't tend to listen to jazz, and that's such a positive thing for the genre. So hopefully they'll look at what I'm doing and then look at, you know, somebody else who's related, and they can begin to enjoy this music, you know, that we love.
Yeah, it's wonderful when you can get your music out of the normal, like, conventional listening, you know, when people hear it, like you say, who wouldn't necessarily find it otherwise, and then like it, because generally that feels like a problem to me. Not enough people in our country get exposed to enough interesting music at a young age. And you're branching out and saving the world.
Spreading the love.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's been really interesting to see. Because I mean, jazz has a kind of funny representation, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah,
it's not very appealing to a lot of people. I don't know what that is. I don't know if they see it as a sort of snobbish kind of art form, or they don't understand it, or I don't know what the reasons are. But it's fantastic that people are slowly kind of picking up and listening to really cool people, and
So this New York trip, let's come back to it. Like a cheesy film, I want to go, if you don't mind, much further back in time. And ask you some questions about how did you like first discover the trumpet?
Okay. Well, my granddad was a jazz trumpeter in the 1950s. He used to play with John Dankworth and Tubby Hayes, and all those sorts of people. And then he became a record producer, and I think he produced a lot of the Acca Bilk records, and other sort of and British jazz musicians.
That's awesome.
Like he produced lots of Graham Collier albums as well. So quite a mixture, and I think he produced a Billy Connolly album as well. I don't know what that is, if it's just him talking or singing. I can't imagine him singing. So we moved, my mom, my sisters and I, we moved to England. We used to live in Bahrain with my dad. So I was starting a new school.
Were you born there?
No, I was born in the UK.
Right.
Because my mum had to have an operation to have me. Right. And then we moved straight away, to Bahrain.
Right.
How
long did you live there for?
Oh, until I was 9 years old. So, 9 years.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I was quite sheltered, I suppose. I went to an international school. Which was fantastic. I got to meet, you know, kids from all over the world. The weather was fantastic for a kid. You know, I got to go swimming all the time and sort of enjoying the sunshine. But sort of, not realizing that in the summer it kind of reaches, you know, 45 degrees centigrade.
And
as a kid, you don't, I don't think you notice it too much. You just love playing outside because it's warm and you can go swimming and stuff. So
yeah,
I have those kind of fond memories of being outdoors a lot. Yeah. And the food was fantastic, so I always enjoy going back, sort of experiencing all of that again. So when we moved back to UK, my mum asked if I'd like to learn an instrument because they were offering instrumental lessons at my school. The first instrument I was drawn to was the trumpet, mainly because of my granddad Terry. Used to play, he gave me my first ever lesson, and which was so exciting. And I also got to play his trumpet as well. And I looked after that as if it was my child.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where it started, and I played in the Merton Youth bands.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school in kind of Raynes Park area.
Every jazz podcast, we just can't seem to get away from Raynes Park at the moment. Sophie Alloway was on a few weeks. Alloway. Sophie Alloway, sorry, that seems to be a genuine problem I'm having in the moment with that name.
Well, it's kind of spelled all, isn't it? We say all, but it's all, isn't it? English language is confusing.
It's very confusing and upsetting. But she went to school in Raynes Park as well.
That's right. Yeah. I don't think we went to the same school. I can't remember which school she went to.
She went to Wimbledon High.
I went to Bushy Middle, which was very nice middle school. And then I went to Raynes Park High School, which I don't know what it's like now, but it was pretty rough at the time.
Right.
I got an interesting experience of, having police officers around the playground and pregnant teens and
That sounds
it's interesting. Yeah.
Colorful upbringing.
I know.
Where were you living when you were there?
We lived in Morden, so not far at all. I used to walk to school, we just went to our local school basically, and that was Raynes Park.
Wow, that's really cool. Martin Music Foundation has a lot to answer for.
Yeah, it's a brilliant music service, and I met some really wonderful people while I was there, like Yannick Gwizdala, bass player, and trumpeter Pablo Mendelssohn. It was really fun. I remember the first time I went, I was very quiet and I didn't talk to anyone. And in the breaks, I would just read my book, and my teacher Norma, she would talk to me and say, you should maybe talk to some of your sort of fellow band members, and say things like, oh, that was difficult, and oh, where are we going from, and that kind of thing, just to pluck up conversation, because I was incredibly shy
to be lost.
Yeah, I know, just to something. I know, because I was such a shy child.
Wow.
And so she really helped me come out of my shell. And I owe a lot to her.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was great. We used to play at Wimbledon Tennis every year with the jazz orchestra and the concert band. And, we'd do music for youth at the Royal Albert Hall and go on little tours in Europe. It was a really fun experience.
Where did you go after school then?
Okay, so obviously I went to Sixth Form College in Morden, And then I wasn't quite, I wanted to go to music college. I wanted to study on a jazz course, but I wasn't really sort of up to the standard that I needed to be. Mm-hmm. So I just went to, Kingston University and just took a regular music degree course. Yeah. And at that time I sort of did personal studying, learning to play jazz and learning jazz theory and stuff like that. So I had lessons with Nick Smart and Paul Eshelby. And so I worked really, really hard while studying for my my degree and went to the Guildhall School of Music. I went studied on the postgraduate jazz course, and that's when I really started to enjoy education. I don't think I really enjoyed school or uni, but until I went to the Guildhall, that's when I sort of came to life. You know, there were musicians there who were really into music, really into jazz, and you know, who were better than me, and really sort of I had to step up my game, and I liked that challenge, and you know, I learned so much being on that course. I do recommend people going there.
Yeah, no, it's a no better feeling than when everyone is better than you, and then I feel like you get better value for money than the people.
Definitely.
That, you know?
Yeah, well, you're there to learn and experience, and I really got that. And yeah, I'm so grateful. I got a scholarship as well. I mean, I would never have been able to afford it, even though I was in one of the last years when you paid sort of, well, much less.
What years were you there?
I was there 2005 to 2006.
Right.
So
did you
just
1 year?
Yeah, it was only 1 year, and I think it was £3,000, and all of that was paid for. So, I don't know what it is now.
Well, I'll tell you, just to entertain our listeners, that in 2010, on my 2 year postgrad, I spent £17,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It was like 10 grand for 1 year, or if you did 2 years, it was 8 grand per year.
Quite sickening, isn't it?
It was crazy, and it was going up so much even from year to year.
God.
Yeah. Do you have any Chris Tyson?
No.
He's a bass player. He's in the band Snow Poet with Lauren.
Oh, yeah.
Chris was playing a gig once, I think at King's Place, with Martin Speak, and after it someone in the audience came up to him and was like, oh Chris, I really enjoyed that, you know, and they like talked and got to know each other, and this guy wound up paying for his whole postgrad.
Wow.
Just because of a gig. God. I know.
How fantastic.
Yeah, I know. It's really crazy, isn't it?
Wow,
really,
it's like guardian angel.
Yeah, I know. Son of a bitch. I was like, well, no one's offering to pay for mine.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Oh, God, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, outrageous.
Yeah, I know.
So who were you taught by when you were at Guildhall?
When I was at Guildhall, I kind of had a sort of variety of teachers, not really sort of trumpet lessons, really. I mean, I had some classical trumpet lessons from Paul Koch, who really helped me get my technique up to standard. But we had improvisation classes with Tim Garland, and I had some lessons with Martin Shaw, trumpet player.
Yeah.
And I mean, we learned so much by just playing in the bands, the small groups and the big bands and all the projects that they put together. So that was an incredible experience. So I mean, we had a variety of teachers, and everyone had their own kind of techniques, in learning to improvise. But also did a lot of personal studying as well.
Where? My brain. Sorry. Where? What after Guildhall? What did you do? Where do you live now? I mean, still in London?
No. I moved out of London years ago with my partner, Noel. He's a trumpet player as well.
Oh, cool.
And we live just outside of Luton in a little village called Sundon. It's very peaceful and green, and it's perfect. You know, you get the best of both worlds. You get the craziness of London and then the peace and quiet of the countryside.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's been so wonderful moving here. You know, we have a converted garage, which is our studio, and I can do composing in there, and we record as well in there, and we've made quite a few albums in our little studio as well. Sort of sending tracks back and forth to people in other countries, which is cool.
Yeah.
And some of my albums recorded in our studio.
That's great having that in your house.
Yeah. It's brilliant because you can, like, just record in your pyjamas if you want to.
My God. That changes your album completely.
Yeah, totally. But, yeah, it's really relaxed and it's nice because, you know, recording in a studio can be very stressful because you've got a time limit and you've got a quite a big bill to pay, and it just eases the pressure off a bit, you know.
When did you have that made?
It was while once we moved here. The guy who makes our trumpets actually is a very good, I mean, he's an amazing genius kind of craftsman, so he built the studio as well, which is really
that's ridiculous. Wait, so this guy has made a trumpet for you?
Yeah, he makes our trumpets. He's his company is Eclipse Trumpets.
Right.
And all their trumpets are custom made, and he lives sort of 10 minutes, but less than 10 minutes drive away. He lives very close to us, and his factory is basically a large shed at the back of his garden where he makes all these trumpets, so he ships around the world. Yeah, so it's really fun visiting because he's got all these trumpets to try out. Yeah. And it's great because I go there and I say, oh, you know, I'm not happy with this bit. Can you change it? Or, you know, we've tested out new models that he's been working on. And it's kind of like a sweet shop for trumpet players.
I can't believe it's only 10 minutes away as well. That's so good.
And what I love is all handmade, you know. You know, I've seen them putting things together and, you know, the hammer and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's excellent. It's really nice to see that and know that, you know, lots of love and care has gone into making these instruments, and they're very good quality. Yeah. So that's cool. That's a good reason to live in Luton.
That is a great reason to live there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very super impressed. So here's a big question for you. How did you got to play on the Radiohead album King of Limbs?
I
love that album and I've listened to it
too, a
lot of times, but I never knew you were on it until I started doing, as the listeners will know, my deep and incredible extensive research for this episode. How did you get that? How did this come about?
Yeah, it was so Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead was basically looking for two flugelhorn players, and he asked his colleague, I can't remember his name, he's a conductor and composer, it'll come to me, but he asked him, do you know anyone? And he recommended me and Noel. That's where it started. And we went to record the album at, I think it's called The Hospital I don't know if it's in the hospital club, but yes. And it was very sort of top secret. We weren't allowed to tell anyone.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was brilliant. And we got to meet all the band, even though we were just recording our flugelhorn parts. So they'd recorded all the sort of guide tracks and we just played on top and trying out things. And and then we also recorded the live version of the album, which is a DVD. And that was fantastic, actually, seeing, you know, recording with the full band, seeing how they work. And, you know, I was so impressed with their professionalism. And, you know, they were so focused and very serious. And, you know, they didn't muck about. It was just like, let's get these tracks done, three takes of each track. And, total pros. Brilliant. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And, you know, they're so serious that you didn't want to make a mistake. They're a bit kind of tense.
Absolutely.
Job.
I should think so. If I ever got a gig like that, I'd make a 10-part series about it. You know, that's horrible not being able to tell anyone, though.
It must have been absolutely bursting.
Well, my God. Who did you tell first when you finally could?
I can't remember. I think I might have told my uncle. He's a big Radiohead fan. And just lots of different people, fellow musicians, and like
and then everyone.
Everyone.
That's so sweet. So tell us about your albums.
So my albums or album.
It's up to you. How would you like this to go?
Okay. Well, I'll talk about the most recent one. So Les Saboteurs. So, like I said, it was released in May, and it's the theme of the album. It's like a relationship between my optimistic side and also the sort of seductive voice of my inner saboteur. So, you know, my kind of inner destroyer, the voice that tells you that you're no good, puts you down and tries to sort of, sabotage things. Everyone has that. All musicians have that, and creative people, you know. So it's the relationship between those two feelings. But also sort of exploring my mixed heritage. So the music from Bahrain and the music from UK and British jazz. But also exploring the journey I've made from the very first album to this one. And, you know, I got to play with Radiohead, DC Puritans, and working with people who use electronics, and that's really interested me, manipulating sounds and just finding new ways of creating different layers and sound worlds. And I hope that's sort of reflected, you know, in the album, this sort of experimentation I've been making with all these different elements.
It's such a wonderful album. It's a real treat to listen to.
Thank you.
and it just doesn't sound like anything else I've ever heard.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I've tried to be really honest and true
to myself.
That's
what it is. That's what's so wonderful about it. It sounds so so honest, and there's no, I don't know, it just seems like a self-portrait, you know?
Oh, that's really lovely. Thank you.
Well, you've achieve something really special with it, to you know, to get that feeling.
Yeah, thank you.
To it.
Well, yeah.
Who else is in your band?
Okay, well, my band, I kind of call us a family. There's a pool of players that I love working with. So I have different combinations. So, like, the main band at the moment is my Hafla band. And Hafla is an Arabic word for party or concert,
right,
or gathering kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are George Crowley on bass clarinet, Ralph Wild on vibraphone, Dudley Phillips on electric bass, Nadia Sharif on piano and Fender Rhodes, Martin France on drums, Karina Sylvester on percussion. Yeah, nice. And that's the main band. I also have a quartet, which is with Martin, Ralph, and Dave Mannington. Yeah, and sometimes we expand from a quartet to a quintet, to a sextet. It's just, yeah, it kind of depends on the venue and and the money, unfortunately.
So
it's nice pool players, and I've worked a lot with Lewis Wright, who's on the album.
Yeah.
And I've worked a lot with Shabaka. I met him at the Guildhall, actually. So I've known him for a long time. But he's sort of like mega busy at the moment. So it's always difficult to, you know, to get him to play on any of the gigs. So I have the lovely George Crowley, and, you know, he sounds fantastic. And, you know, he's a lovely person to work with and really gets the music. And
George is really something.
I totally love his playing. Brilliant.
George is on my, like, I have a very long list of people who I need to deal with in London. James Allsop's at the top, George Crowley for sure, Josh Arcaleo and Joe Wright. You know, a lot of tenor saxophone players and a lot of bass clarinet players. Sam Rapley, of course. Yeah, I need to.
He's great.
I need all these guys to leave London. Oh my god! Oh, we should take it in turns to have a month where, I don't know, you know, where you're the one that does all the gigs. I've got some, I've got some controversial ideas. But yeah, I had a question for you about, what was I going to ask you? Oh yeah, it was really boring, actually.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this should make a great show. Do you do all the, like, PR side of it yourself, or do you pay someone?
Ah, okay.
Or so do the label do that?
Yeah, this is interesting. So, I've never worked with a PR company before until I was signed to Name. Mm-hmm. And they use Prescription PR, who are amazing, totally just fantastic. They're the ones who sort of got my music out to, you know, the heavy metal fans, the hip hop fans and whatever. And and then one in France called IC Colors. And so they obviously spread the music in France, and there's a huge, you know, a massive following in France now. So I didn't pay them. It came out of a sort of overall budget.
Which
the album sales pay for. So I suppose I'm kind of paying for it anyway, but not directly.
I know what you mean.
So, but I mean, any musician, thinking about using PR, totally do it. I mean, it's really expensive, but it's totally worth it.
Because that's my worst. I mean, I would never not, because I just would hate to make an album that nobody ever finds out about, you know.
Yeah,
that just vanishes.
Well, that's what I did with the first one. I didn't even tell people about it when it was released. It was so sort of you know, I wasn't very confident, and was worried sort of that people would hate it and that kind of thing. So definitely having PR kind of Yeah, improves your confidence, definitely.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I think it's a good thing mentally as well, having that support network, you know.
It's a great support network. And, you know, we're expected to be so many things as musicians. It's quite nice if someone else does something for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really, really helps. Like you said, as a musician, you've got to be your manager. You've got to do the promotion as well as perform and compose and organize rehearsals and gigs. And it's ridiculous. So, yeah, I recommend if you can get help, take it.
Who are your biggest musical influences then?
Okay, well, I absolutely adore Kenny Wheeler. His music, his playing, it really speaks to me. It's on a sort of emotional level. So he's like my hero.
Yeah.
I remember going to his 80th birthday concert at the Royal Academy of Music, and I was in tears for the whole gig. It was really embarrassing. It just touched me, you know.
Yeah.
So whenever I put a record on, Kenny Wheeler record, I just think, oh, Kenny, I love you.
Yeah.
It's just so emotional. I love the sort of fragility of his sound and also the passion and.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's somebody I'm really influenced by and absolutely adore. But then there are also people like a trumpet player called John Hassell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of, I think he's one of the first trumpet players to really explore electronics with the trumpet and creating music with field recordings and that kind of thing in a jazz setting, you know. I love his music. It's very kind of ambient. You have to really listen carefully because there's so many things going on that you might not notice in one listen, and I like that attention to detail.
Yeah.
So he's a big influence. And then sort of like more on the kind of Arabic side of things, I'm very influenced by an oud player called Rabi Abu Khalil. He's brilliant. I love his music. It's got so much energy. And he's sort of explored mixing Arabic music with jazz. And, you know, that really interested me and inspired me to explore Arabic music as well and also sort of fuse it with jazz, but in my own way. I suppose those are my three main influences. But obviously, you know, when I started listening to jazz, I loved, and I still do, Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis, and I listen to Tubby Hayes a lot. Love Tubby Hayes. And all sorts of people. And I kind of, you know, I went through the jazz education, and then started to study and hear about more modern players.
Do you have a like particular album of Kenny's that you really like? Well, that you love?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I've got
so many to choose from.
I know. I think one of my favorites is Azimuth 85. I know it's not him only. It's a beautiful trio with John Taylor and Norma Winston, and I love that album.
There's one, the third track on, I'm not sure, it's an Azimuth album, but I'm not sure what the name of it is. And it's like a 12-minute long electronics drone.
Oh.
Just goes on forever.
I don't know that, no.
Okay, I just wanted to see. Good, well, at least I know now that we're thinking of different albums.
Yeah, maybe. I think there's another Azimuth band.
Yeah, because it's the same trio, it's the same vibe. You know, but anyway, never mind that.
Yeah, but I think that's one of my favorite. I mean, all of them are so beautiful.
Did you ever hear the What Now album?
Yes, yeah, I have that one, and that's lovely. Yeah. Yeah, and obviously large and small ensembles and what is it? New High, is that what it's called?
I've not heard that one.
Or maybe I'm
No, I'm sure you, if there's any doubt, I'm sure you're in the right.
Let me see. I'm looking at my CD collection. What is it called? Yeah, New High. That's a brilliant one. I like, Dear One. That's brilliant. Windmill Tilter. There's one called It Takes Two. That's,
Is that with two bass players? And Kenny, sure. And a guitarist.
Yes, two guitarists and bass right. And Fugel. And yeah, it's really beautiful. There's so many fantastic albums and all really enjoyable for me anyway.
Yeah.
Mm.
tell us, what you might not have any, this is a perfectly acceptable answer. but do you have any hobbies outside of playing the trumpet? And
this is something I suppose is fairly recent. I've kind of realized that you have to get away from music now and again because it's very consuming and it's a full-time job and you never really switch off. So I go to a yoga class once a week. I suppose that's kind of my hobby. And that's really fun. I mean, it's not like the sort of the yoga people expect, whereas lots of meditation, it's sort of more of a kind of gossipy class. I'm into yoga at the same time. I suppose it's more exercise based, so we do a lot of kind of strengthening and as well as flexibility and sort of balancing and stuff like that. So that's really fantastic. And I get to meet people who I wouldn't normally meet, like sort of housewives, nurses. There was an ex-con, a criminal used to come to the classes, postwoman and, just people that we never bump into as musicians. So that's always, it's just really lovely to get away from the music scene and talk to real people.
Yeah, definitely. It feels amazing. It's so hard to do that. It's hard to find anyone.
I used to take Arabic classes, learn to speak Arabic. I think it's important.
Cool. How long did you do the Arabic classes for?
For about 3 years, and then I've become so busy I haven't been able to really continue with the classes. So just one-to-one classes, but really fantastic. Yeah, learning Arabic, which I never learned it when I was living in Bahrain. My dad never spoke to me in Arabic, and which is weird. And the school I went to, everyone spoke English because it was an international school. So it's crazy. I never learned any Arabic really. So I kind of missed out on that, and I thought I'd have some lessons, which have been really beneficial. Because
amazing. I imagine that you can be that you're incredibly good at it.
I could be better, but I mean, it's difficult learning Arabic because not many people really speak Arabic. Sort of Arabic I was learning, which is Gulf Arabic, which is quite different to classical Arabic, and I suppose the kind of Arabic that people talk in this country. So I never really had the practice except for with my my teacher, and I didn't get to have regular lessons all the time. But I've written songs in Arabic, so it's been really helpful in a musical way as well. And my teacher used to get me to memorize Arabic pop songs and translate them, which was really fun.
That's great. Well, that's such a great piece of homework.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was always, very enjoyable. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Getting to immerse yourself in the world of Arabic pop.
Yeah, it was very funny. Yeah. And all the songs are incredibly dramatic. They're all about, they're about love, but, you know, somebody dies or there's yearning for someone who they can't ever have. And, you know, you're heartbroken and all this stuff. It's all really dramatic. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So none of the songs are really happy. They're quite miserable.
Yeah.
But that's very typical of well, particularly Gulf sort of culture, Arabic culture. Very dramatic.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So to finish, can you tell us about your trip to New York? I can't remember what we already said about it now.
Okay, well, so I'm going with my quartet, and it's we're opening the festival. It's a night hosted by Giles Peterson. It's UK jazz night, and so I'm sharing the bill with Nabaya Garcia. The Comet is coming, and Oscar Jerome. So all of us are playing on the same night.
Yeah,
representing the UK.
Yeah,
which is really exciting. And it's presented by PRS Foundation and BBC Introducing. So it's a really big gig, and a very special gig as well. So I'm going to stay there for a whole week and to mingle and watch lots of music and meet old friends, and it's going to be really fun. Oh,
that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Did they ask you to start with, and then you were like, okay, I've got to get a visa and all, you know?
Yeah, it was all sort of really, really last minute. So basically, Giles Peterson was asked to curate the night, and he's a big fan of the album, so he recommended me, and PRS got in touch and said, can you send some tracks over to the BBC Introducing site? So I suppose lots of people sort of sent in tracks, and then they picked four bands.
Wow.
So I don't know how many people were asked. It may have been only four. So I don't know. But anyway, so I hadn't heard from them for ages, and I thought, oh, no, I haven't got it. That's fine. It would have been really tough anyway. I probably wouldn't have gone into the country anyway. But so I got the email saying, you know, we'd love to have you. And that was in November. So,
the process. Very much notice.
No. The process takes ages. You know, I had to write this big thing about why each band member is important to my music, and, you know, why they can't be replaced by an American musician. And I think I wrote a kind of 2,000 word essay, basically.
Yeah.
It's mental. And then, you know, I had to write a biography for them. This is all for the US government, by the way. To do a biography that read like a good Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
And I had to find international press to prove who I was, that I wasn't sort of dodgy person coming in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's all the sort of security questions, and it's so expensive getting the visas.
Yeah.
I was just really lucky that PRS funded the visas, and, you know, they've been so supportive, and I'm really, really, really grateful. And I wouldn't have been able to make this trip without them, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of money. I'm not going to say now, but it's mind blowing. I can't understand why it's so expensive. You know, we just want to make music. We're not out there to steal people's jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a very paranoid country, and there's no guarantee that you'll get your visa in time or you get it at all. So it's a risk. Even if you pay for the visa, you might not even get it. So, because I mean, this happened to me before. I was meant to play at the Hollywood Bowl in 2013 with Easy Puritans, and we were supporting Bjork, which I was so excited about. But I didn't get my visa in time. They just said no to me in the interview. And they don't have to tell you why. But this law firm I've been working with in New York for this visa, for New York, and they sent me a list of reasons, and I think I ticked a few boxes.
Right.
If you can use your imagination of where I'm from, and So it wasn't looking good. So I was on this waiting list for 9 months for them to realize that I wasn't a security threat. And that was devastating. I've never had that kind of prejudice before. I just see myself as a little kind of womble, from Wimbledon.
Cool.
Yeah, and how can I cause any harm? So I was really, really worried this time. I thought, oh, they're not going to give it to me, or I'm going to have to wait for 9 months again and miss the gig. And and they said, oh, your visa has been approved. And I was so shocked. I went, oh, okay. And I nearly took my passport back, because this is what happened last time. They gave me my passport back and a sheet saying you have to be on this list and da 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 da. You have to wait. But no, it was
wow.
Great. And I got
that must have felt incredibly good.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually advised to go to Belfast to get my visa rather than London.
Wow, that's so weird.
I know, because apparently they're friendlier in Belfast. And so.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Wow. So that was also a risk. I love Belfast now because they gave me a visa.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, apparently a lot of people are now going to Belfast from the UK to get visas.
Yeah.
Any musicians listening to this who want to go to America, get a good lawyer, and they'll advise you on all these little things that I never knew about.
Great tips.
Yeah, it's worth it. Yeah, so we're going, and it's all really exciting, and I can't wait to play, and it's a real adventure.
Well, my God. Well, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been so nice to sit and talk.
Yeah.
Figure out what's going on. And we'll keep an eye on this gig, because it sounds cool.
Maybe I should also mention the next London gig coming up is at Jazz and the Round on the 29th of January, and that's with my Hafler band, so the 7-piece.
Oh, amazing.
So, yeah.
That sounds really, 7-piece sounds fun.
Yeah, it's great, because I mean, that's the band I love writing for, and so there's so many different parts in it, and it's a full sound. You get the sort of the fullness of the album. There's so much going on, and that's what you get in the 7-piece.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you for chatting.
Pleasure.
Yay.
And we'll speak to you again soon.
Amazing.
Sure. I'll find an excuse.
That sounds great, yeah.
So Dan, it occurs to me that we don't have a budget. As you pointed out to me while we were listening to Yaz there, it's a negative. Like, this show is still costing us money to run. Which is tragic. And of course, if you're listening to this and your heart is bleeding, you can go on patreon.com and you can help support the Jazz Podcast. Because then every pound that supports us brings us closer to our goal of running all the way up to retirement.
Would that be the first Patreon we have?
Yes, we have none at the moment. So if you want to be our first and only one, it's like, you know, you can like pay a pound a month to help the cost of the hosting or something.
So you know that band I told you about last time, Scary Pockets?
Yeah.
So, did you listen to any of it?
Yeah, I did.
So the keyboard player, the guy that runs that, founded Patreon.
Wow!
There you go, yeah.
That's incredible!
Yeah.
That's one of the most incredible links we'll ever pull off.
There you go.
It's almost like we scripted it.
And I didn't know at the time.
That's
amazing.
I found
that out in hindsight.
Wow, done. I'm blown away by this news. So, the other thing, if you're kind of, your heart's bleeding, but you also have no money, then plan B is review the show. Find us, rate us, review us, you know, those
we
things.
Have done, yeah, I mean, the audience are predominantly jazz musicians, so I think it's more likely we're going to get a review.
I can do that. I can live with that. You're right. I like you. You've made the assumption that we have one of the poorest audiences in the podcast universe.
And also, they're just very not very engaging either, are they?
What, podcasts?
No, the listeners. Our listeners.
They're a secretive, passive audience. For
very
sure.
Passive.
That's how I'd be, though. I hate, like, getting in touch, you know, tweeting the show. That's not... But the pods I listen to, I feel a bit weird about that.
Yeah.
So next week is Matt Hurd.
Oh yeah.
A wonderful young alto saxophonist who lives in North London. If you're a saxophone player, you'll appreciate this. Very unusual. Matt Hurd plays on 1.5 strength reeds. That's really...
Oh, I thought of a jazz lookalike.
Oh, yes, do it.
For Matt Hurd.
Ooh, that's perfect.
I haven't seen Matt since college, so my recollection of what he looks like might be totally off. Cillian Murphy, you know the actor?
Cillian Murphy?
Yeah, he's in 28 Days Later, if you've seen that.
Oh, I haven't seen
that.
Oh.
Cillian with a C, C-I-L-L-I-A-N, Murphy.
I see.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that got a kind of... a Matt Hurd kind of vibe? No, maybe not. Let me look at what Matt Hurd looks like again, because I'm probably well off.
Wow, I've seen this dude. He's been in something. There's a really evil, annoying git.
A tiny bit. The tiniest bit.
Well, let's put a picture of... I can see one, actually, on Wikipedia. Mm. At the premiere of Black... In 2005, Cillian Murphy... looked pretty much like what Matt Hurd. Yeah, I can see that.
He's got a bit more of a serious face.
Yes, and he's a bit cool. Messier. Oh, Batman Begins. That's what I recognize him from. He's in Inception as well.
Yeah, he's in loads of things. Yeah. He was in what's it called? Dunkirk as well recently.
Oh,
the last
sweet.
One, man.
I still haven't seen that.
He's a good actor. Oh, you haven't seen that? You've got to watch that.
No, I'm behind. I know, I'm behind the times.
Sort your life out.
Big time. Right, Dan. So, I'll see you next week.
Great.
We'll do it all over again.
Yeah.
Until Thursday.
Thursday.
Thursday. Farewell.
Farewell, indeed. Bye.